Succession number 27308, Reel 3.
Roland Walsh, Reel 3.
Right, so that's it then. I'm back in the Navy. It's 1940, March, and I'm back in. I'm in the recess until they can deal with me.
Could I just ask, while you were on the run from the Navy,
yeah,
as a deserter, had they come looking for you?
I haven't got a clue. One thing I do know, though, I never bothered to change my name. I still kept my name, and if they caught me, well, best of luck, but they didn't get me.
They didn't visit your parents' home or anything?
Ah, they went down there and that, yeah, but they didn't know a thing. No, I never went near my parents. I went straight to my brother's, got a bike in there, and rode away. They never had a clue. I kept my family out of it. I didn't want them in.
Did they know you'd deserted, but they didn't know where you'd gone then?
They didn't know anything, no, not until later. I suppose when they poked a notice up on the Lymington Police notice board, this man wanted for desertion, a local lad. But he wasn't there, was he? Anyway, as I said, I was in this recess and it was a bit boring. I had about 2 weeks while they found me papers and all that lot. The people in there, I used to pick oakum and goodness knows what, scrub corridors during the, you know, and then they were making bets of how much I would get when I got up there, deserter. Would I be shot at dawn, or would I get 90 days and kicked out? Well, they had little bets on it, you know. Anyway, then it started. They got me papers, and each day I was marched from the recess across to the Commodore's block, across the parade ground, between two armed guard each side of me, over and an RPO behind, and then straight in front of the Commodore was Commodore Ookie Walker. Very interesting man. He had a gold hook on one hand, you know, and I used to get it. I'd get in front of him, the PO behind me would whip me cap off, they'd read the charge, desertion, so and so and so and so. And this Commodore, they used to call him Ookie Walker, but anyway, he fascinated me. He could get this hook and he'd turn over the pages of my book, my papers, and up and down. Anyway, he said, okay, we got you up here. You're charged with desertion. Have you got anything to say? I said, yeah, I have. He said, what was that? I said, well, to start with, I had a problem that I couldn't deal with. I had to sort it out, and I thought that was the best way to sort it out. What was that? I told him. He said, okay. So he said, were you ever contacted? I said, no, sir, no. Well, he said, looking at this, you made a fortune out there. He said, even our officers didn't do as good as you. I said, well, I worked hard for it, sir. Night and day, all this lot, you know. He said, right, well, what I want to know, he said, this is after a couple of months, you know, after a couple of months. He said, why I want to know here is I've got your papers to go to the Queen's Light Infantry in Liverpool. I said, yes, sir. He said, well, why are you back here? I said, simple. I said, I want to go into the RSC as a driver or a dispatch rider until after the end of the war, when I would have gone back into my job outside. I said, I went, I was honest with him, and he said he would get me into the RASC, and when I saw I was to go to the Queen's Light Infantry, I thought I'd be better off giving myself up and coming back and take what's coming. So on the last time I went over, he said, right, he said, I am now in a position to deal with you. He said, I've got several options. He said, there's a war on now. I can appreciate it might have been a bit rough at the start in peacetime, but he said, that was the thing. You signed on for 12 years. But you buggered off, you deserted. And I said, yes, sir. He said, right, now. He said, you did very well outside. You didn't change your name. He said, so I have got the option of offering you a king's pardon, which I'm going to do. Because, he said, you went away in peacetime, you came back in wartime. He said, you're a trained sailor, you're a trained person, and we need them when now there's a war on. I'm going to give you the chance to carry on and make good. If you go the other way, you'll get roped and you'll go to jail. He says, it's up to you, but you've got a king's pardon. This means that you will retain your original official number, PJX912933. That will stay. He said, this will be obliterated from you, the desertion, and he said, you will carry on. So it's up to you. So I went back, collected my gear, and went in over to the drafting office. In the barracks, I suppose, for a week, maybe 2 weeks, no longer. And I comes into the mess one day, and there's a draft chit sitting up on the thing for me. I picks it up, and it's for HMS Foyle Bank. I didn't know what it was, but there were a lot of draft chits there for her. I hadn't got a clue what it was. But eventually, we all left the barracks in Portsmouth. From inside, in those days, the train came into the barracks. And we loaded up inside, went up north to Stranraer, across by ferry to Belfast, and commissioned HMS Foyle Bank. I said, when we were all fixed up there and settled in and got to know, we hadn't got a clue what it was, except that it was a big ship, very much anti-aircraft with all the special stuff and that, and off we went to sea. One day we went to sea. That was my first time since I went away. So I said, when we got clear of the harbour, the captain cleared the lower deck and said, right lads, our job from now on will be at Portland as harbour defence ship. We're going to be moored in Portland Harbour, very close to the docks, so that we are anti-aircraft ship for Portland until they can build up their own defences. And so off we went. I said, we went down to Portland. As we went into Portland, a mine blew up in front of us, but didn't do much damage. Went close in and moored between two boars, two boys in a strategic part of the harbour.
Could you tell me what Foyle Bank looked like? I know you said she's a big ship, but how she was armed and what
type of ship? Well, she looked like a big merchant ship. On the base of her, she was long, big, and of course, the upper deck, the derricks and all that lot were gone. And the holds had been, some of the holds were retained, others were mess decks, and the whole of the upper deck was built up to take four anti-aircraft turrets, or not turrets, mountains. And plus multiple pom-poms, starboard and port sides, plus 0.5 machine guns. We had the lot. And we had 2.285 radar up there, which was fairly new. So we were well fixed to go to do that job.
So what was the accommodation like on board? You said domestic.
Very
like?
Comfortable. Very good. Very comfortable. Generally, for a Navy ship, it was okay. We had our bunks, we had our hammock nettings, or whatever. We had our hammock nettings mainly, and everything was good.
What were your duties on board then? What was your specific role?
Well, mine was... Mine was an unusual one, actually. Bear in mind, this was my first ship since ages before, and I was getting to know the new Navy, the Navy in wartime, as opposed to the one I knew in peacetime. So we went there, and I was quite happy we were there. And my main job, my action station, was on the starboard gun of left-hand gun of X turret, X mountain, which was 0.35 ACATS down aft, down the stern end. So I was on there about 20 feet above the deck on this double 3.5 mountain. 3.5. That was my job as action station.
So what was your job though on the gun?
Range setting on the
What was your role on the gun?
Oh, range setter on the left hand side of the gun.
How did you do that?
Oh, just turn a wheel or whatever. It's, you had a position in the middle of main part of the ship. It was a big place called the HACP, which was high angle control position. Now that was my cruising station. In other words, not my but my cruising station. We used to do exercises daily at all these. And in there, we used to have a big table in the middle with people all around it with settings, you know. They'd put settings on which were sent to the gun. And I would be, they'd be sent from the HACP to X, Y, and A, B, and all those to the guns. And I would set the ranges on whatever was given on this by turning the wheel on the side of the gun. Mind you, in undercover, because we had a shield all around us. The only ones open were those that were loading behind. So anyway, that was my action station there. But I had another one. We hadn't been there about 2 or 3 days, I suppose. And then a pipe came over one day. Anyone with a civilian driving license, report to the Master at Arms. Well, of course I had one. But then again, I still remembered that you don't jump and volunteer for anything. You watch yourself there. So I gave it a bit of careful thought, and I thought, right, we're in here for practically the rest of our time, and there's we're right by the dockyard, and they probably need staff cars. So I could prove, if I volunteer, I could clue up driving a staff car on the jetty there. So I promptly trickled along to the Master at Arms office and presented myself, and he said, oh yeah, so you got a driving license? Yeah, let's see it. I showed him and he said, oh yeah, hey, he said, I've got a good job for you then. He said, you will be the engineer and driver of our motorboat. How's that suit you? I said, well, it depends, doesn't it? What's it entail? He said, what it entails, he said, is, as you know, we've only got 1, 2, 4 engineer ratings on here. In other words, the original crew who were civilians but had been enlisted for the Navy for their time in the Navy, and they were called T-124. So they weren't conversant with our side of it, the RN side. He said, so you will now be the driver and engineer of the motorboat. In other words, you'll be on that all the time. She'll be going backwards and forwards all day to shore with postmen, with liberty men, with whatever, with store, anything. He said, you will be. He said, now you've got a nice motorboat. You've got a covered in a compartment alongside the engine with a bench, so you can sit on the seat or alongside the engine. He said, "You, it's quite a nice little job." He said, "And you'll look after the engine and you'll drive it." He said, "Another word, you know, change gear and all that lot." He said, "You'll have a coxswain, you'll have a bowman, and you will be the driver." So he said, "All you got to do is go down there and drive it." So I said, "Well, that sounds all right." So I took it over, and who's that? Is that you, David? Oh, you're on there. Well, to go on, I had quite a good number. We only had about 300 or 400 yards to go. I used to take the postman in at 9 o'clock in the morning, wait for him, bring him back with the mail, and then all day long trips and that. You know, it was good. Oh, just a quiet number. I stuck that, and we were down there a month or so. It was every the snag was that I wasn't entitled to any leave. I couldn't go shore leave. There was no one to relieve me. So I started worrying the Master at Arms every time he came in the mess deck. Oh, what better relief then, Master? How better relief? I can't get ashore. I am entitled to leave, but I can't get ashore. What better relief then? And this went on for a while, and eventually he got a bit annoyed about it. He came at me, he says, look, he said, if you want to run ashore, when you want to run ashore, you tell me and I'll get you a relief to cover while you're ashore. I said, oh, that's fine. Okay, then, because I did have a brother in Portland on another ship across, what's it? And I wanted to run ashore with him. So he came up, I said to him one night, I said, I'll tell you what, I'd like to run ashore, master. Righto, I'll get you one. You'll be relieved. And I'm down the boat. And then, lo and behold, down comes an engineer lieutenant. T-124. We had no RM ones, huh? And he comes down, I said, what are you then? He said, I'm your relief. I said, you're joking, ain't you? A lieutenant in the engine room. I said, he said, yeah, I know, it's a bind. He said, but there it is, I've got to relieve you so you can get a run. I said, well, okay. So I went ashore a couple of times. But it wasn't very good. I was reluctant to keep it. So one day I was ashore with my brother in Weymouth and we were having a couple of wets and RM patrol came along in their old Jeep and he said, any of you two off the foil bank? I said, yeah, I am. He said, well, you better get back there, have my bombing session. I said, oh, yeah. I said, my brother, ain't no good rushing back, is it? We better go and have a few wets to get the courage up to go back. So we drinks up till chucking out and then we goes back, get the last Liberty boat back, gets aboard and apparently all it was a high level bomb. They come over to have a dummy run and thought, right, and they missed us at the dockyard and at Chesil Beach. Not much, nothing at all. So I thought, oh yeah. By then I've had enough of this lieutenant, I wanted off it, you know. I worried him for another week, Master Arms, and about a week after he came in, he said, right, he said, now let's get this straight. He said, I got you a relief now. I got you a proper relief. You're coming off the motorboat. I said, oh, thanks. Lovely. He said, good. Right, he said, now this chap, I don't know who he was. I don't remember. I know he was a leading seaman. He must have had a bit of knowledge about boats. And anyway, the Master Arms said, look, he said, you've got a week here. He said, I'll give you a week to turn it over. He said, give him a good run. You know, he said, get it done right. He said, and that's it. He said, so... I ran him through it. He did the runs for 2 or 3 days, you know. And then just before that, though, about a couple of days before that, we'd been in the mess deck at night, having our supper, you know, like we did 6 o'clock. In those days, Lord Ho-Ho came on. Oh, you remember, well, you may have heard of him, Lord Ho-Ho. He used to spout a lot of crap over his bloody, what's it? And he said, he came out with, oh, yes. And by the way, if the British Admiralty don't shift that attack ship swinging round the buoy in Portland Harbour, then we'll send our Luftwaffe over to do it for them. So we splits our sides laughing, you know. You know, hark at him. At any rate, eventually they cut out that. We used to listen to them, they cut it all out. Lord Hall, they tried him after the war and hung him, or shot him, whatever they did, hung him, I think. Anyway, we never took any notice of that. We used to get the old usual. We used to be up there every night, all day, night and day, on the old guns, you know, hammering them when they went over. So we had upset them. We were obviously upset them because they were only in Cherbourg, but just across the water, and they used to come over us, and we used to hammer away at them day and night.
What heights were they flying at?
Oh, I don't know. Well, normal. Some of them were at normal height, you know, high up there. You could see them, and bang, bang, there we go. And I suppose that's what upset them. They thought, well, anyway, we never bothered. Life went on, and I got matey sorted out with the boat. He was quite happy. I said, now look, now listen. I said, you take over tonight. This was July the 3rd. I said, now, I'm back in the bottom part of the ship now, so I'd be scrubbing the mess deck in the morning, 9 o'clock. I said, but you want to be crafty, like I've taught you all the week. I said, after your breakfast, about 7:30, go along to lower boom, get down in the boat, get in your little compartment, get a book out or the paper and have a read until they pipe the boat away for postman. I said, and you're laughing. Yeah, I'll do that. So, of course, he takes over from me. The next morning, I'm cooking a mess. He thought that was, Master Arms thought that was a, he said to me, you can start off partnership cooking a mess. I said, well, okay then, Master, that suits me. So I'm next day, I and my mate, who was on X-Gun with me, we scrubbed out the mess. It was all nice and clean. The whole mess deck was bright and shiny. And we were wondering what to do, but there'd been a lot of action going on the upper deck, running round and shouting and all sorts of funny things. And then, all of a sudden, there seemed to be action. They sounded action station, but it seemed to me, from now, it was very late. It should have been a lot beforehand. But anyway, action stations went, and I looked at matey, my mate, and I said, well, I suppose we'd better bloody get up there, hadn't we? He said, well, what else? Let's go. But I said, as he went out first, and I was stepping over the combing at the door, because it don't go to the floor, I had to step over that. I got halfway over, and there was all mighty bang, and I found myself flying across the canteen flat. On my face, I got up, went back to the mess and looked in, and there was all the Amec nettings burning. The double ladders that go up and down were all twisted with blokes in them, all twisted round. The Amec nettings were on fire. The tables that we'd just scrubbed were all, their legs all twisted. It was a terrible sight. And I said to him, look, I said, we better make our way along. We went down the port side to go out. We got about halfway down, and they dropped one down the funnel and blew the side of the ship out, and we could see the docks just out there. So we had to turn around and come back. We went right round the other side, down the port side alley, and we're below decks, and there's this bright sunshine shining down through a hatch, and opposite the hatch at the bottom is the Master Arms office. And of course, there's one of, as all of a sudden we're going along there, and as they all rushed out the office and up the stairs to go up on the deck, they machine gunned down it, and they all went. And I looked at my mate, I thought, right, but we got to deal with this. We got over them. We got down then to the after end of the ship, which were where the canteen, where the sick bay flat was. And that was a big flat where all the non-combatants were mustered. Writers, sick bay attendants, wardroom stewards, all those. Although they had action stations, they hadn't been able to get to them, and they were all mustered in the sick bay flat. And there was a ladder going up to X-Gun from that flat, up to a straight ladder up. And I said to my mate, well, I better make our way up there. We're going up the ladder. I'm way up, and he's below, he's behind me. And then there's an almighty bang. They'd hammered one through the upper deck into the sick bay flat. Well, that cleared that lot, including the mate who was behind me. So I then got into the shell handing room, and that was wicked, because it was only a little small compartment, and I looked up, and the hatch was open to the gun deck, and there was bright sunshine streaming through. So I had a bright way of sunshine coming down, and in amongst it was all little particles of stuff in the air, and it was dark, and I was getting up your nose was running, and I had to get up out of it. So I got up the ladder onto the upper deck, and then I looked, there was these, they were coming down mast height and dropping their bombs. They just, you saw them come away, you know. They come down, and there weren't none of my guns crew were all, there weren't none there, actually. The guns were all bent to hell. And I heard someone shouting about. I went to the back of the looked over, and so Badger Otley, a leading seaman, he was on the Glasgow with me, actually, and he was going to town there. He had his gun going. He was the captain of X-Gun, and it was a sight. He had two crew there, and the coconut matting around the gun was all on fire, like, you know, and he was saying, hey, give us some ammo, and they were saying, well, we can't, we only got that practice there. He said, well, give us that then, rammed it up, you know, practice shell, and there was a plane coming down, and he wanted to get a crack at it, and he poked this practice shell in and hammered that up, whether it did or not, I don't know, I never stopped to see, because I was walking around then, and I looked over the front of the gun deck, and there was all that lot. I was looking down from about 15 feet onto the upper deck, which was riddled with bomb holes and bodies and all sorts of twisted metal, you know. And then a voice shouted up, anyone up there? And I looked over, it was the first lieutenant. I said, only me, sir, there's no one else. He said, right, he said, you better get down, we're on fire aft, he said, and we're going to abandon ship shortly, so you better get yourself down. So I got over to the ladder, and it only went a few steps, the ladder had been blown away. I had to drop, yeah, about 10 foot, landed on a kedge anchor on me back, which at the time I didn't bother about, but I smacked a couple of vertebrae at the bottom of my spine, you know, and I didn't bother about it then. It wasn't in after years that I got the results of that. Anyway, I thought, right, I'll make my way forward. And he said, we're going over the bows, I'm abandoning over the bows, because the bottom back end was all alight, burning and smoking and everything like that. And I got to the passage to the upper deck. I was on the upper deck to the passage leading forward, and it was about 8-10 foot wide. I got nearly along to the starboard pom-poms, and there was a body of men all piled up there, you know, and I looked at them, and the POGI was stood beside the pom-poms, and he said, go on, push your way through, walk over them, they're all dead. He said, get up here, because I want you here. And I got up there, and he said, right, stay there with them two. He said, the mantle's still firing, and when he's finished, we'll have to get him down. I said, and I stood by watching. Mantle was on his gun, and what he was after was, there was a plane that dropped a bomb, and it hit his gun's crew, and killed his gun's crew, and shattered his left leg, but he'd pulled himself up on the gun, and he was having difficulty getting the changeover lever on the top from electrics to hands. It was slightly bent, and he was getting it bit by bit. At the same time, cursing and swearing at the plane that had gone out over the bay, turned around, coming back in over the mole. And he was trying to get this, and he got the lever back. At the same time as the plane opened up, they opened up together, in with four barrels of pom-pom, and the plane with machine gun. And what happened to the plane, I don't know. It just seemed everything went, you know, as though it all blew about. And Mantle flaked out on his gun. But he'd been hit across the chest with machine gun. So we went, the PO then said, right. Now, he said, I want to... He sent the other one up with the others to help get Mantle down. And he said, I want the rest of you... get the wounded and anyone you can into all these boats that were alongside, and I want some to go down below with the first lieutenant. Well, I thought, I ain't going around picking up them. There's our surgeon lieutenant was sat on a bollard with his guts in his hands, and I thought, I'll go down below. So I went down below with the first lieutenant. And we had a look round what we could. There's a lot of places were flooded. There was a couple sort of sat against the bulkhead. First lieutenant went over and said, come on, shook their shoulder, and they fell apart. So nothing we could do there. So I went up on deck, and by then they'd got Mantle down. I'll give a man. We lowered him into a boat alongside and made our way up on the forecastle. and went over the forecastle, down ropes into the boats that were waiting, because all the boats in the harbour had hung around waiting for it. And amongst it all, they took it as well. And they took us ashore. We all mustered in at Boscawen part of the dockyard, and we all mustered there. And then the postman had the mail, called out all the names. Nothing. It was funny, you know. You only got a few answering, and anyway, by then she'd sunk. She was on the bottom within half an hour, and we had about, oh, I suppose 6 or 7 coaches came in the early afternoon, loaded us up and took us to Pompey Barracks.